This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today's the 29th of November, 2017. My name's Patrick Smith. After what was a very fun week of hockey and a fantastic four-point weekend for the Belfast Giants, we're back to talk all about it. Davey and Sizz, how are you, boys?
All good, mate. All good.
Mate, I'm dying with a flu. It's not good. I don't know if I'm made off. I'm sweating like Dave Sims at a Weight Watchers weigh-in, mate.
You're a soldier, mate. You're a soldier.
I know.
Well, let's fly through this. We do have some fabulous guests coming up. We'll hear from Adam Keith, Brendan Conley, Steve Thornton, Matt Nickerson, and Dr. Victoria Silverwood. And we start with the game against the Coventry Blaze. Of course, this was the first of 10 games on the road for the Belfast Giants. We don't return to the SSE Arena until the 29th of December. And it started pretty well in the end. A 5-4 overtime victory for the Belfast Giants. Brendan Conley opened the scoring in the first 4 minutes on the power play before Marco Valeran scored a penalty shot on what I would determine to be a bit of a soft call. But anyway, the Coventry Blaze made it 2-1, Patterson scoring then, and the scoring in the first period is rounded off by Jonathan Furland to make it 2-2. Into the second period, Brett Robinson scored to make it 3-2 to the Coventry Blaze, excuse me, before two from John Kurtz put the Giants ahead. Coventry equalising in the third through Brett Robinson. In the overtime we went, and despite what the game sheet originally said, it wasn't Sebastian Sylvester who scored the overtime winner. It was Brendan Conley. Goalkeepers in nets, Jackson Whistle for the Belfast Giants, 27 shots, 23 saves. Kevin Nastic for the Coventry Blaze, 42 shots, 37 saves. Your referee was Dean Smith. And Davey, a bit of a cat and mouse game.
Yeah, but another good performance from the Belfast Giants in terms of our 5-on-5 play. You know, I think we're pretty dominant against them. We forechecked well as well. You know, kept possession of the puck quite well on the Saturday night, and I think it was a game that if we hadn't came away with the extra point, it would have been one would have looked back on thinking, you know, that's a point lost there. But you know, got to credit the guys that guts it out, got that. You know, got it the overtime and a lovely, lovely breakaway on that 3-on-3. You know, Conley and I think it was Gulakos breaking a play up about the blue line and playing a bit of tippy tappy with each other and slamming it home and Con celebrating in some style. It was certainly a good win that I think, you know, Jackson Whistle saved what he had to save. I don't know that he was under that great a pressure through the evening. The Giants kept him to the outside pretty well. And you know, I just think it was one of those games where we'd gone in there previously, we'd got hammered 6-1.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, being in Cardiff the night before, going to Cardiff the following night this time round, you know, slightly just the nuances of the fixtures. But I think there was a taste of revenge on the lips there. The guys certainly didn't want to be hammered in the sky down the way they had been the last time. And we played just a really good road game. It wasn't a greasy win or anything. I think it was a well-deserved one.
So this was the second and last trip due to the new conference, and obviously Coventry not being in our conference this season, his last trip to the Sky Dome of the season. But as Davey said, the last time we got absolute hammering. Now Coventry are the bottom three. Should this have been as close as it was?
Listen, we've had tough games against Edinburgh here at bottom this season. You know, there's no easy games in this league anymore, Paddy. You can't just expect to turn up and take the points. And you know, Coventry, all right, the last couple of seasons has been really good hunting ground for us, but, you know, it's always been a difficult rink to go to up until those couple of years. I thought that the big boy line, as in, you know, Riley, Furland and Kurtzey, they put a really good shift in the other night, you know, managing coming up with three goals and three big goals at the time as well. And they really, you know, for the smaller guys, you know, we've got Rutherford back in there, playing alongside Murph and Brendan Conley. So, you know, you've got small guys playing a different type of game to what the big boys are, getting the puck in behind, banging a few bodies. Davies already touched on how many hits Jonathan Furland's thrown this season. It's, you know, the guy's an absolute machine. And it'll be good to, as I say, well, he's missing out for the next three games, unfortunately. But, you know, it'll be good to get those three back together again, hopefully sooner rather than later. But Davies already touched on a really good road win, thoroughly deserved in my opinion. And you know, Brendan Conley with that goal from Brendan Conley for the shootout winner, it was great to see him being so passionate to you know, get that winner as well. Normally he's a bit more reserved, but a real, real good lad.
Do you know what? I'm not going to spend too much time in this game because it was pretty much you know, paint by numbers, cat and mouse game, Davey. But how much of a weight off the shoulders was it to get that first win on what is a difficult 10-game road streak?
Oh yes, it's been all about, you know, the cliches in hockey about momentum and stuff. But knowing that this 10 games now, you're away from home, you want to start off well. And okay, took 3-on-3 overtime to come away with the 2 points, but that'll give them a lot of confidence going into Cardiff on Sunday night.
The highlights of the game, which, you know, it's a good game, it's well worth watching. Blaze TV Live with Ed and Stu. Yeah, a good performance for the Belfast Giants, but maybe not as much in it with regards to incident. Because the following night, the Belfast Giants took on the Cardiff Devils at Ice Arena Wales. This one went to overtime as well. In fact, it went all the way to a shootout. The Belfast Giants taking it in that shootout 4-3. Sebastian Silvestre opened the scoring for the Belfast Giants on the power play before Liam Ulmer and Patrick Aslan paid the Giants back and went ahead to make it 2-1. Ram Martinelli rounded out the scoring in the first period to make it 2-2. Into the second, and Joey Martin put the home side ahead, where they stayed until 5 seconds left on the clock, when that man Brendan Connolly popped up again. Nothing through overtime, so into penalty shots we went, and we went through, what was it, 5 rounds of penalty shots before David Rutherford finally was the only man to score a goal, and the Giants took the extra point. Back in the goals, Jackson Whistle, 40 shots, 37 saves. At the other side, Ben Bounds, 36 shots, 33 saves. And your referee, I'm sure we'll talk about, was Mike Hicks. Says, you went to the cinema instead, didn't you?
You know what? It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Really well-organized event by the OSC. And, you know, a really good crowd. And it was just, you know, 190-odd. And all turned up. It was... But we couldn't have picked a better game to get for the first time we've ever shown the cinema. Really good atmosphere. Everybody's wearing their Giants gear. Popcorn went everywhere when Brendan Connolly scored the goal with 5 seconds to go. I'd pick it out of my ears for a couple of days. And it was absolutely brilliant. I think everybody was there. Or sorry, that was there. You know, I think they had a really good night. But, you know, back in Cardiff, you know, Paddy, Adam Keefe said last week or the week before that, you know, we played a game and we just thought everything was going to be okay. And he said the same thing to me today about Cardiff. You know, 5-on-5, I would be very confident of our team against anybody in this league. Anybody. We've looked a better team 5-on-5 against everybody we've played, you know, so far this season, in my opinion. And, you know, penalties, we've more penalties than anybody else in the league. That needs to stop. Our discipline has been atrocious. We need to knock it in the head. We need to start playing 5-on-5 hockey. Stop taking selfish, stupid penalties. And I'm not just talking one or two. Everybody needs to, it's collectively, you know, taking, and then being called for penalties, as Davey, you know, Davey's touched on as well, about guys, and, you know, some, Galacro's getting called for a slash, and then a Cardiff player gives him a slash. Exactly the same situation, doesn't get called for it by the referee. But that's because they're getting a name for themselves of taking stupid penalties. And it makes it easier for the referee. And in this situation, Hicksy didn't have his best game. But I thought we were excellent. I genuinely thought we were excellent throughout. Didn't think we were under any pressure. They scored 3 power play goals. I think it was 8 attempts they had. You know, so we had basically had, we only got the 1 power play marker. No, yeah, we got a power play marker to start off with, and then it was great to see Ram Martinelli get a goal, and Brendan Connolly's got better and better and better as the season's gone on, and you know, getting that goal with 5 seconds to go was excellent.
Davey, you were at the game, and you sent us a message basically saying it was a powder keg with regards to the atmosphere that was there and what was going off next. Obviously, Kirchy gets that hit in the first 6 seconds of the game that polaxes him, and he's crawling off the ice. That's something we're going to talk about later on when we've Vic Silverwood on the show. But it developed from there. The fight happened, the incident with regards to Ferland and him getting his 2+10, which has resulted in a suspension. And, you know, it was a real difficult game, but an entertaining watch.
It would be hard to find anyone who could accuse me of being neutral when it comes to hockey. But this was a fantastic game of hockey. This is a game of hockey you would have watched and found brilliant, no matter who you supported. And I've seen so many people on Twitter. I think I've seen Jimmy Squeaker on Twitter saying, if you could guarantee me that that's going to be the playoff final and it's going to be played like that, I'm booking my tickets to Nottingham now, kind of thing. You know, it was a great game of hockey. Went backwards and forwards, no quarter asked, none given. Both teams going hard into the corners, getting shots on nets. Both goaltenders coming up with some saves they had no right to make at all. Bouncy makes one with a stick. I think it's from Rudy, maybe. It would have been the second period.
Oh, it's an absolute stunner.
And, well, Rudy will probably be looking back at that thing and why didn't just elevate the puck 3 inches and I've got an empty net to shoot in. Bounce comes with a stick on the high, makes a save. It's unbelievable. I was standing clapping and the guys are looking at me going, why are you clapping? It's like, unbelievable. And but 5-on-5, we talked about the time when we went to Cardiff earlier in the season. We came away with the points, 5-on-5, we were superb. We talked about Coventry, 5-on-5, we were superb. And I'm not digging guys out because Mike Hicks called some, and this isn't an accusation against the ref or anything. It's only human nature that you will identify players and you will be harsher on them. There's reputational calls, and the Belfast Giants are having to deal with that now, that there's calls that were made the other night that were so soft. So soft. There's a call, I think it's on Silvestre, about half an hour gone in the game, and then Toey takes it too many men that puts them on a 5-on-3 at the events he score from. This call for the slashing is horrific. So soft. Way, way, way behind the play, nothing in it at all. And, you know, it's effectively, you know, lost as a goal. We have to be smarter. You don't, just don't give Mike Hicks the opportunity to call it. In that situation, there's no need for him to. It was the softest slash you'll see this season, but he still slashed him. Now, to me, it's not a penalty, but yes, he hits him on the gloves. It's one of those that 9 times out of 10 is probably not given. We have to be more disciplined because when we're even strength, we are probably, and this isn't just with the team specs on, we are probably the best team in this league, even strength. 5-on-5, but at the minute, we're not killing penalties well, and we're killing too many penalties in the game. That's probably the bigger criticism as well, or the bigger problem, that it's not, we're not just killing one or two penalties. You know, it was the 10 penalties with the kill the other night. So we have to be smarter, and we have to realise ourselves that we're a very, very good, even strength team, and we need to stay 5-on-5.
This is a bit of a strange one with regards to it, because I think you're absolutely right, but this doesn't affect us 5-on-5, says, but We've got a jumping ahead to one of the TFAs that we got in from Joe at Weedall. Says, when will Spiro ever learn to keep his mouth shut? He's a great player, but seriously, he needs to control his emotions on the ice and in the box, which would be great if he could stay out of it. He did get a 10-minute misconduct in this game, and there was a bit of a, let's say, a social media furore, and maybe around comments that he made after that.
Do you know what? It's like Wayne Rooney, you know, Wayne Rooney at his younger days and you know, sort of taking that bit of his game out of his game, you'll lose a bit of the player. You know, Galakos is a great player. We certainly would like to see him an awful lot more on the ice instead of the penalty box, you know. Agreed. But you know, I just think that if you take his, you know, you just tell him, look, don't show any emotion, don't be taking any penalties, don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. He might as well just hang his skates up. And yes, I think he's a marked man. That's that Davies touched on it there a few minutes ago. I just think that the referees, even the guys that haven't refereed him this year, you know, I think that if he gets him, whoever it is referees on Sunday, no idea, or Saturday, Sunday, whoever it is this weekend, if they haven't refed him this season, there's a strong chance that he's going to get a penalty. Because, you know, if we're naive enough to think that the refs are linesmen, don't have a wee WhatsApp group like we do, you know, that's absolutely ludicrous, because he'll go out there and he'll know, right, number six, he's an absolute pain in the ass, blah, 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 blah. Right, I'm just going to give him a penalty. And I have no doubt that there may be players or referees, sorry, out there who would do that. He does need to knock it in the head. He's not the only one, you know, there's other players that have taken stupid penalties this year already, but I think it was 492 minutes of penalties in league games this season. And that's 80 or 90 more than what the second place team is. That's far too many. It's only November. It is far too many. Stupid penalties, stupid calls, selfish penalties, as my old coaches used to say, stop taking selfish penalties. We need you on the ice. And hopefully, you know, he doesn't take any more. He doesn't get as emotionally involved in the game as what some of the ones he has. He's been unlucky in some of the calls. Davies alluded to maybe one or two calls at the weekend as well. But he doesn't help himself.
I think maybe, I don't want to say, but I think it's maybe being a little bit unfair to him, because since he came back from a suspension after the Fretter incident, I thought he's been superb. And I was only saying it the weekend, or you know, by that, I thought that he'd calmed everything down and he was more or less focused on what was going on the ice. Davey?
I like Gooley.
Yeah.
I like the way he plays. I like the edge he plays with it. He's the kind of player I want on my team. He's the kind of player, if he played against me, I'd hate him. I like his attitude. Yeah, he needs to peg it back at times, but you know, in big games, he brings his A game. You know, like he was really, really good the other night. He was really good across the weekend, and you know, says comparing with Rooney is a very good comparison there. You know, sometimes you have to take certain, you have to give certain leverage with players with your very best, and he's one of the very best D men in the league, especially with his offensive talents. And he comes up with big points at crucial times, and he comes up with big hits, and he messes with people's heads, and he gets in. But yeah, you're right. He spent, what's that, 2, 4, 14, you know, the guts of half the game on the bench. You know, we need him. We need him to be playing, you know, because he's probably going to be playing 6 or 7 of those 14 minutes if he's not sitting in the penalty box. So he just needs to rein it in, especially the abusive official calls, the slashing and stuff. It's part of the game. You're going to get called for those. If you're a physical player, if you're an agitating kind of player, you're going to get the slashing calls. You're going to get the roughing calls. You just live with that. That's part of it. It's the abusive officials. He needs to know just when the red mist comes down, just that needs to have some method of just taking it away from, you know, he's taking that abusive official call when nothing else is really going on. There's no other penalties being called at the time. He's just been chirping and chirping and chirping since his last slashing call. You know, I think he's gone to the penalty box. I think they've scored on the two power plays that he's the first two penalties he's set. And I think he's still chirping and chirping and chirping. You know, 5 minutes later. And I think, and then obviously the sort of stuff you've talked about there about getting involved with Todd Kellman and the fans and stuff, you know, didn't cover himself in glory, gets sent to the dressing room and say, you know, go and calm down in there. You don't need to sit in the penalty box for the next 10 minutes.
We're going to talk more about specifically the Kurtz incident later on, but Jonathan Ferland has received a 3-game suspension for his check from behind and the incident that took place there. Says, what do you think about those 3 games?
I thought it was soft for 3 games. I don't think it was intentional. I think he was unlucky to come out on the other side of, as I say, you know, he's missing this whole weekend, and then I think it's Manchester in the 9th. So coming back for the Sheffield game, hopefully, you know, we're like, you know, Davey says that every single week we're a no excuse organisation. But I'll tell you what, we're struggling to put, I mean, Keeper said to me this morning, and he says, have you got your skates ready? You might be needed. And I went, no, don't think so. It's, where we are right now, we're literally down to the bare bones, and obviously with 1-game suspension, we're really struggling to put a full strength lineup out, because with so many guys out injured again, and obviously the suspension certainly doesn't help.
David,
what's the question, Patrick?
In regards to the Ferland incident and what he's been suspended 3 games for,
it's one of them. Dobbs is again came out with a fairly clear and concise, you know, ruling as to what they believe. Puts his hand on his shoulders, and the other guy, I think it's Batchy, forgets how to skate. He seems to like toe pick the ice and about the blue line and goes head first in the board. Really, really glad he's okay, because at full speed it happened just almost in front of me, and it was scary at the time. I thought he had gone head first on. When you see the replay, I think he just gets his head turned and catches mostly on the shoulders. I didn't think Ferdinand put that much weight on him, but he's obviously done enough to flick him into the boards. And you know, I think he's whenever you see 1 game for the headshot by Fournier, you see 3 games for that, you can argue, you know, where's the consistency with, but then you always go down the safe bend, and you can't compare apples and eggs, you know, you gotta compare a headshot, you got to compare a checker from behind. So, you know, I think he's a bit unfortunate to get three games, but I think in that position, the responsibility is on Jonathan Fernand not to put any, make any contact with Batch at all there. If he doesn't put his hand on him and he falls in the boards, well, then that's his own fault kind of thing. So you put a hand on him at all, you leave yourself open to the ban, and unfortunately, he's going to sit the next weekend in a bit.
Yes, the incident, just reading from the determination, the incident is deemed dangerous and needs eliminated from the game. It's not a body check, not a battle for the puck, and not considered a good hockey play. The incident is considered checking from behind. He has received a 3-game suspension, so he'll miss this weekend against the Milton Keynes Lightning, the Guildford Flames, and then the game away at the Drizzle Dome the following Saturday. We'll wrap it up there.
Paddy, just, you go on. Sorry, Paddy. Do you think maybe Dobbs have taken into consideration that he's already had a 2-game suspension this year?
I thought maybe it would say that, because when you look at some of the other determinations, it does say that, quote, Paquette, for example, in addition to the suspension for this verdict, Paquette will also be considered a repeat offender. So maybe that these sort of determinations are affected by the fact that he has received a penalty before, but we don't know. It doesn't say it in that. And under the new Superdops, which we'll talk about later, we are getting a more full and frank description of why he's received the suspension. One last, just so we asked yourself, says, because I already asked Davey about this regards to the Congbe game, but 4 points from a weekend to start the actual 10 swing is, to be fair, I would have taken 3. When we got the overtime, I thought 3, I'm happy with that. To get 4, absolute bonus.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, Paddy. You know, coming out of there, I was talking to Mace, came to the cinema the other night along with Mark Garce, and we were just chatting, you know, coming up the start of the game and face off, and Mace said, you know, getting a point out of here tonight would be a great result after the 2 last night. So it's, you know, coming out with 4 from the weekend, you obviously can't do any better. You know, the guys turned up, you've got to pat them on the back. You know, I'd like to think we are critical of our team when we lose, and you know, you try and think of the positives coming out of every game. But, you know, coming out with 4 points from this weekend was a massive result, because it's never easy getting into those two ranks. And again, you know, obviously, Jackson, we haven't touched on Jackson, you know, which maybe said he did all right on Sunday night. I thought he was excellent over the weekend. You know, I think he maybe, if you look at the 7 goals that he conceded, I think he probably won one of them back, and that was the one against Carr. I can't remember. I think it might have been the Joey Martin goal, the power play on Sunday night, that just sneaked in at the near post. And
yeah,
I thought Jackson played very, very well this weekend. He made a couple of really big saves that he probably didn't have any right to make. But I thought he, you know, over the last maybe month or so since Stephen Murphy's went out injured, Jackson has really stepped it up and put off some big saves at really big times.
David, you agree on that?
I think Sizz is right there. Over the weekend, the one that he'll look back on will be Joey Martin. Ironically, on the 5-on-3, so you know, you have to take a wee bit of, he'd been facing a lot of rubber there consistently over sort of 30, 40 seconds, and he'd made a couple of big saves, and I think he's expecting the shot to be elevated, and it comes in between his skates, and he's just get a bit handcuffed on it. He can't do anything with it, and unfortunately he sneaks through. 5-on-3, you know, sometimes you've got to say, well, you know, you move on. I thought he was excellent over the weekend. Penalty shots, 5, you know, I think he saved 5 or 6 of them. So, you know, they threw everything at him. He came out, he was aggressive. He came way, way beyond the blue paint. And then sort of Wiss's technique is to come out high and then back off really quick and force the shooter to make a move. And then, you know, he's a reactionary goaltender. He made a couple of good glove saves, a couple of good blocker saves. So, He did really, really well over the weekend. And as Simon said, he's been forced to face a lot more load than he would have been expecting this season. He's played more games this season already in November than he played the whole of last season through the whole of the year. So, you know, he's been expected to shoulder a lot of load. I don't know now with, you know, Simon saying if we're down a few bodies at the weekend, whether Chris Trill maybe gets a game now because they lighten the load. But we will see over the weekend.
Highlights of this game come from iSign TV on YouTube. And of course, there's the post-game interviews that Davey conducted at the game with Adam Keefe and David Rutherford. Keefe were talking of his pride at the Come From Behind win in Cardiff. You can get them at soundcloud.com/AVFTB. We stick with the interviews, and we will be hearing from the head coach, Adam Keefe, and his look back at the weekend. But first, here we'll chat to the overtime hero of Saturday, Brendan Connolly.
We're joined by Brendan Connolly after the two victories over Cardiff and Coventry at the weekend. Brendan, first of all, you seem to be no number on your back because all your goals are being given to Sebastian.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I guess maybe I got to get my number out there more after I score. But hey, it's about wins and losses at this point, and it was a big weekend for us.
Those two wins were absolutely huge. You know, going into Coventry, winning in overtime, and then the shootout goal by David Rutherford on his comeback to Belfast against Cardiff in Cardiff.
Yeah, it's good to have him back. That's what he's here to do. He's here to score goals. He wanted to get out there and prove that, and that's the biggest goal as you're going to score. You know, it was do or die, and he put it on the line, made a great shot, posting in for us, and we needed it.
Yourself, Darcy Murphy, and David Rutherford seem to be built up a good bit of chemistry in just over 10 days.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are fairly easy to play with. Murph's north and south. He's fast, and he can finish pucks off really well, so you just got to find him in the good areas. And Rudy, from what I've heard, you know, he's a skill guy. He makes a lot of plays, so he's easy to read off of. He's going to create a lot of offense on his own as well, so just trying to distribute, get those guys the puck when I can, and do my part when I have a chance.
You're in Belfast 3 months now. How are you settling in?
It's awesome. I love it. The fans are great. The weather's not as great sometimes, but it's a beautiful city. My wife and I really love it here. We've enjoyed ourselves.
Looking forward to your first Christmas in Belfast?
Yeah, it's going to be good. I think we're going to go get the tree tomorrow. It's got to be a live tree. That's a one demand. So we're going to go get a live tree tomorrow and get the house set up, and it'll start to feel like Christmas here.
Two games in the road trip, 100% record so far, and then on to another two this weekend. Milton Keynes and Guildford. What sort of challenge are you expecting from those teams this weekend?
Yeah, we didn't have the best performance last time we went to Milton Keynes, so we're definitely looking to bounce back on that. They're both really good teams. They're high-flying offensive-style teams, so we gotta have structure defensively, not allow scoring chances, and you know, take care of special teams, and we'll be fine.
Brendan, thanks for your time. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Adam, two more victories of the weekend, two big games, Coventry overtime, and you know, the penalty shot victory against Cardiff. You must have been very, very pleased with your troops.
Yeah, absolutely. It's obviously we like an easy run in and an easy 2 points, but on the road and throughout the season, you know, some of the games we're gonna have to sneak out by the, you know, the skin of our teeth here and just gut out some victories, and guys did that this weekend. You know, obviously an overtime one that I would like to see us close out earlier, but you know, Coventry's a good side, especially in their building, and obviously Cardiff is pretty good in their building as well. So it was nice of us to get that last one there, some puck luck at the end, and finish it off in the shootout. So I'm super happy with the guys' effort and no quit until the final buzzer, and that's important. So
the Kurtz, Ferland, and Blair Riley line on Saturday night seemed to have a really good line.
Absolutely, yeah, they were clutch for us. You know, huge, and that's, I'm not surprised. You know, three guys that have all had great careers in North America, and three guys that are character guys, and really, I think they really led from the front to that game, and they were the difference. So, super happy with that line, and you know, that's what we're going to need from here on out. Is, you know, sometimes there's going to be a line that's just not feeling it that night, or they're marked men, and they're playing the D zone is tight on them, and making sure that they don't get any chances, and we're going to need other lines to step up and on any given night, and they did exactly that on Saturday night in Coventry, so it was great to see.
Cardiff on Sunday was a different game, another battle against the Devils. It went behind again, came back into it, and managed to get the David Rutherford shootout goal. You must have been very pleased.
Yeah, it was. I think 5-on-5, we were super happy with our effort, and our penalty kill's got to get a little better and more clutch, and we got to clamp down on the penalties. You know, it seems to keep coming back to haunt us sometimes. So, especially against those teams that have great power plays like Cardiff, you know, we're allowing them an opportunity to get back into the game and really calm them down. I think we had them on the run there for the first little bit until you know, they got back into it with some power plays. that's on me. You know, we got to talk and sort it out and really make sure that we're clamping down on penalties and we got to get better as a whole as a penalty kill as well. So, you know, that's on me. We'll get to work on those things. But overall, pretty happy with the start of this 10 game swing and. Yeah, I mean, the guys responded and showed up on the road and took the 4 points. I mean, can't be upset with that.
Another two games on the road this weekend, Milton Keynes on Saturday, Guildford on Sunday. You faced both teams already. Disappointing game and disappointing result against Milton Keynes the first time you met them at the start of September.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's no harder weekend than this weekend coming up for us, really. Two teams that are... newcomers to the league, but tough venues to play in, smaller, volatile fan base that's loud and in your face, and they're obviously good at home for a reason, and we got to go in there and certainly not take anyone lightly. If anyone, it's Milton Keynes. I think they've got one loss at home, so we have to be prepared to go to war and again see out of the penalty box and stay disciplined. That's what we're working on here this week.
It's getting cold in Belfast. How's Chris Trill settling in?
He's getting by. You know, he's getting plenty of ice time out there in practice, so he's staying warm because Dundonald was pretty damn cold today, and it's pretty cold outside as well. But I'm sure he's used to it, and he's keeping warm himself.
Any update on the injuries to Mark Garside, Dustin Johnner?
No, still kind of week to week with those guys. Unfortunately, I think we've lost John Kurtz for the weekend, concussion. So it's it's a little more adversity that we'll have to get through. And it looks like we've lost Jonathan Furland as well for 3 games for suspension. So. These are the things that we've been dealing with for the last 2 months, and it's no different. No excuses. Go on the road, do a job. Simple as that. It's a hockey game. We got to find a way to get points, and I think the players will respond.
Lastly, on Saturday evening, we'll be at the cinema. The Belfast Official Supporters Club have organised another cinema night, and we'll be watching the game against Milton Keynes. It was a fantastic experience on Sunday night against the Cardiff Devils, and I'm sure the guys appreciate that effort as well.
Absolutely, yeah, it's great, and especially with the 6 weeks on the road, it's great that our fan base can get together and still have a good time whilst watching the players. And obviously, you couldn't have picked a better game for it to be the one versus Cardiff with the late comeback and the fight, and it was a really good game for fans of both sides. Really exciting and not so great, and it was a stressful game for me, but I'm sure it was stressful for the fans as well. But great atmosphere it looked like in the theater, and I'm sure that it'll be a great atmosphere again on Saturday, and very happy that the fan base can get together and still enjoy the game, like a little different than obviously at the SSE Arena, but as close as you're going to get to a road game. So
thanks to Kiefer and to Brendan. Later in the show, we'll have a retrospective from Steve Thornton, who'll give his opinions on the season so far and give us his views on our next topic, because the third edition of the Northern Land Connections Friendship 4 took place at the SSE Arena this weekend. RPI, Maine, Providence and Clarkson, the latest colleges to battle it out for the Bell Pot. And once again, the NCAA gives a tournament to remember.
You know, I don't think you can emphasize enough to the impact that this is having on Belfast. We're talking over 50 million people in their homes across the US and Canada who are watching this right now.
I want to get caught in their own end. They are caught in Tate. Tate out front. It's 1-0. Duhame out front. Here's Pinot. Pinot with the shot. He scores.
This is a first-class facility with a wonderful atmosphere. So it's been a tremendous week, and our young people will never forget it.
I think the sky's the limit for this tournament, and I believe that with all my heart and soul. And I think that I truly 20, 25, 30 years from now, this tournament will be going on, and I think it will be just be growing and growing in its stature, and there'll be just that much more excitement about it.
They stick the line by Pieper. Pieper gets it through, and that is a beautiful goal. Robbins on top shelf. 1-0 Blackbears.
Fantastic goal. All created. The hard work is done on the left wing by Pieper.
Whiffen with 14 seconds remaining to York. York! Up top shelf where you keep the good Irish whiskey. That's some kind of finish. Power play goal with 10 seconds remaining. 1-1.
Now, once we got here, it's all about playing hockey. But before we got here, and for the first couple of days we were here, it was all about learning from the culture of Ireland and Northern Ireland. So it's been a win-win. It's good education and good competition.
I love the idea of a tournament like this in a city like Belfast with the four teams from North America coming over here. And the hockey's excellent. The fans seem to enjoy it, and it's a great thing.
He's calling for it again. Amoroso with the shot, and it's gloved by Hockey and batted out of the air. Hockey got a glove on it, and Brasseau doesn't give up. It's a 5-on-3 goal. Takes a bump from Duhaime, but took that hit to make a play, and it's in. Carey Lyon with the bomb. It's 2-1. Last few days, and I mean that with a lot of respect. This is a tough team to play against. And there's a tapping. Well, there was the original shot by Quince, and Cooper will follow up.
Again, pressure, pressure, pressure.
In that piece, you heard from Eric Porter, the chairman of the Odyssey Trust, Father Brian Shanley, the president of the Providence, Lee McElroy. That's McElroy, not McElroy. Athletics Director of RPI. The Right Honourable Nuala McAllister, Lord Mayor of Belfast. Stefan Ustorf, hooligan, the head of player development for Iceburn Berlin. And the all-round hockey legend that is Ralph Cox. To hear those interviews in full, check out the SoundCloud account. But the final itself was a battle between Providence and Clarkson. And despite Providence taking an early lead, Jeff Mason's alma mater could not hold on. And as the might of the highest ranked team in the tournament, Clarkson pushed by, Nick Perrig rang the bell pot at mid-ice to succeed Vermont as champions with a 4-2 victory. Davey, unfortunately you couldn't make it to this year's tournament. Did you get to watch it on the streams?
I did indeed, and I was very fortunate. I was there, obviously it was over for Shezzy's testimonial on Monday and Tuesday, and I stayed on the Wednesday night and attended a fantastic dinner event at the City Hall for the NCAA Friendship Four, and I was actually on a table with the University of Maine guys, their coaching staff, their video analysis guys, and, you know, made some fantastic friendships there that hopefully Alfie's going to come over and Simon will want to be involved in that. Hopefully going to go up and play Portrush in April time once the season's over. He's hoping to come back to Northern Ireland and get a game of golf in, and, you know, sitting chatting to Ben Gidey, their head coach Red, and it was just a fantastic night hosted by the Lord Mayor, who, as we were having a wee bit of banter there the other day on Twitter, your interview with her's fantastic. She's got the hockey bug now as well, you know, and how important it is that the City Council back us in this, and how important a tournament it is for way beyond the hockey, for the STEM, for the kids that these schools go to, for the schools that the guys from America come over, that they brought a crowd of young people with them this year. And, you know, I was standing in the City Hall having a glass of wine before the dinner started, and this young kid came over to me. Couldn't have been any more than about, say, 14 or 15. So confident. He didn't have anybody to talk to, and he just came over and he went, "Hi, can't remember what his name was, I'm sorry." but he said, you know, "Hi, I'm with, you know, I've came over from America just to get involved with the Friendship Four." And he stood and talked maybe about all these friendships that he'd made and how important it was, and all his friends were over with him, and they were skating. They're the ones that took the Lord Mayor skating. They were going to the local football. They actually went to Bloomfield Football Club, an old football team of mine. Because I'd said to him, "I know you." And he says, "What do you mean you know me?" And I said, "I've seen your face."
And I got my phone out and looked up Facebook to one of my big mates, Ricky Watts. And he goes, that's you, isn't it? And he went, it is. So I'd seen him there about 10 of them had gone down to East Belfast there, and they'd all been given football kits from an old football team of mine. And, you know, all little things. There's so many things go on apart from an absolutely amazing hockey tournament. And as you know, you did go a wee bit fanboy with Stefan there, like Paddy, didn't you? But you know, he was over obviously scouting. What do you call it, Kenny? He's scouting.
Nico Sturm.
You know, so they're obviously identifying already. I think that guy played in Germany previously, but they're identifying guys who they think have a big future in hockey at the top level, you know, DEL being a top level hockey program. So, you know, some of these guys will go to the NHL, some will go to AHL, some will go to Europe. And, you know, this is premium level hockey on our doorstep. And it was fantastic. I watched it on the BBC Sports website, the final on the Sunday afternoon, and an amazing crowd in. But as I say, all the things that go hand in hand with this tournament, this is edition 3, edition 4 is already booked. We'll be announcing the teams for edition 5 and, you know, in the new year, and just don't see it losing momentum. I see only bigger things coming from it.
You say about Oostorf, I think he looked a bit freaked out as I more or less recounted his entire career back to him at the start of the interview. But
yes, the intro was something else.
but an absolute legend. Says you on Friday you had a bit of time to yourself, but on Saturday you were behind the mic with Aaron Murphy. But what was once again just a fantastic tournament overall?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I really enjoyed it again this year, and you know, like there's kids that played this year. Actually, there's kids that played the weekend that are going to play in the NHL next year. There's definitely 100%. You know, we've already had, I think it's 4 or 5 altogether. There's Matt Benning seems to be doing the best out of all the guys that has already been over. He was with Northeastern, was it?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
You know, he's basically, you know, he's playing with Connor McDavid. He was fighting Vladimir Tarasenko last week, and he's playing in the NHL on a regular shift. You know, at the top, the highest league in the world, and he was here 18 months ago, 2 years ago, playing in the Friendship Four. And
were we not discussing last week before the tournament started, we were doing some stats, something like 9 or 10 players. Now, not all of them have stuck, some of it's only been preseason games and stuff, but I think there's 5 playing in the NHL and another 4 or 5 that have played at least preseason level. You know, so 10 players that have came through the NCAA, through the Friendship Four tournament, have made it.
Yep, and again, there's already been guys who have been drafted. I think it was RPI at 3 guys that were playing have been drafted. One of them in the fourth round.
Backup netminders going to the Red Wings.
Yeah, and you know, like a young Will Riley who's got a coming up from his family come up from Dublin, and he's a lot of family around the Dublin area. They all come up on Friday and Saturday watch him playing for RPI. And this kid's an absolute gem, like big defenseman, 6'3". You know, he skates really, really well, and he loved it here. And he said, well, you know, if we don't make it in the NHL, we had a chance to interview him for the legacy videos next week on the Tuesday that they came in, and he was only here 24, maybe 48 hours. He absolutely loved it. Mm. And this is exactly what we're looking for. You know, do we pick up a guy who's played for one of these 4 teams to come play for the Giants next year? There's a very good possibility that might happen. And obviously, you know, looking forward, well, let me know who's coming next year. And as I say, 2019's been confirmed. 2020, who's speaking to Thorns today, is basically already being talked about. And now they're talking about bringing women's NCAA hockey here as well. Look, what they obviously trust, Steve Thornton, Shane Johnson, Jeff Mason, what all those guys have done for this organization, not just for the Giants, is absolutely phenomenal. There's no other team in the UK could do this. None of them.
No one else.
I think it's time that the league actually got behind the project.
100%.
There's no chance. No but chance.
That aside, Simon, you know, one of the interesting, I think it was Joe Britannia during his speech on Wednesday night at the City Hall, had said, you know, how many teams are beating their door down to get onto this. Mm-hmm. To play at the Friendship Four, and what he's saying is
So it'll be next year, it'll be forced through the fifth edition. Teams that came in the first year want to come back. The way their program is written, they can only do it, they can only do these major trips through college once every 4 years. So these guys are now saying, as soon as our chance is back there again, we want to come back again. So the likes of Northeastern and UMass will play that first year. They want to come back.
Listen, a quick word about the trophies themselves. Dave, I know you love that bell, the fact that the trophy that it is. And, you know, Nick Prairig for Clarkson ringing it above his head at center ice. To be fair, I think it's a fantastic little bit of sport and theater having that bell, as you know, for all of it signifies, the fact that it's a college game, the fact that these are students, the fact that it's a school bell, but also the newly named Marty Walsh, speaking of hope, player of the tournament, going to Jake Cayley.
Yeah, and I see that this week he was named the NCAA Player of the Week as well. So he did really, really well over the weekend. But a lovely trophy, the Marty Walsh Trophy. It's obviously the beacon of hope, and as Robert said during his speech, it's Nula with the Hula. You know, it's a scaled down version of the statue in Belfast. And so it's a lovely trophy with a bit of a linkage to Belfast. It's not just something that they've dreamt up. You know, there's a bit of thought goes into these, and I love the bell. You know how much I think of it. Templemore Avenue Primary School, East Belfast. It links everything, you know, and these are the little things that Robert thinks of. You know, as soon as it was going to be, obviously it was the bean pot, and then it was the bell pot. And as soon as the bell pot, he said, couldn't be anything else but a bell. And he had to go. So they went out there and they found the bell. And, I, as you say, a bit of sport and drama, a bit of sport and theatre, when they go to centre ice and ring it, and you've seen every player in that roster pushing each other out of the way to get a go at ringing the bell. It was brilliant. And then that picture that
awesome.
William Cherry has taken some phenomenal pictures over the weekend, but that one that he's taken from the gantry, obviously looking down, the team in a circle with the captain in the middle with the bell above his head. Those are things that those guys... I know at the level I play sport at, I love getting team pictures, so I'll have memories in years to come. I have them on my Facebook, but I'll print them out, I'll make a wee book, whatever. Those guys, that be able to look back on the time they went to Belfast, the time they won a championship together, and to have those memories and those pictures, brilliant. I love that sport and theatre.
And says, you know, Jake Cayley got the player of the tournament, but you'd be hard-pushed to say that the MVPs weren't sitting up in Boomerang Corner.
Oh yes. They were absolutely brilliant.
The Clarkson Pep Band.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. You know, everybody that was there was, you know, even Boomerang Corner guys, they basically said, can they stay? And you know, they'd be quite happy to give those seats up. They were fantastic. Yeah, I didn't get to see them on the Friday afternoon, but I was speaking to Thorch today, and he was saying, he when he was interviewing him, he was talking about it. And, you know, there was 500 kids in W5 on Friday afternoon. They were doing the STEM project and learning more about that. And the whole band came around and walked them one by one in a like a train type thing, right into the arena on Friday afternoon for the first match. It was absolutely brilliant. And I'm hearing there might be more than one coming next year. The school paid for all those students to come over here themselves. They travel all over the US with them, and they thought it was just right to bring them to Belfast as part of their group.
It's interesting, Davey, you know, these bands, you know, they're such a staple in regards to US sport, and for them to come over here was a great novelty, but so entertaining.
Oh, absolutely fantastic, and you see how many people in Belfast now are like, right, let's get this going, Boomerang Corner. You know, don't ever see that happen, but... they added so much atmosphere to it, and as you say, they're a staple of NCAA sport, of college sport across the, you know, basketball, American football, hockey. It was a real spectacle, and as Simon has said there, hopefully next year we'll get another band back, and you never know, you might even get two bands back. And you know us, Northern Ireland, we love a good band, like the one.
And you know, they had a band and a march, unbelievable. Yes, also, if you go to soundcloud.com/AVFTB, you'll get all of those interviews I spoke of earlier. And you'll hear, as Sis says, the suggestion that there could be a women's tournament. That we'll see what happens with that going forward. Let's move on, gents. And coming back to the Elite League and the Giants, as promised, let's hear the chat that Simon had earlier on with the Belfast Giants head of hockey operations, Steve Thornton.
Steve, it's been a very, very busy time for you. I'm just wondering if you've managed to get some sort of recovery put in place after the weekend that was the Friendship Four.
I got a little bit. It was easier to sleep after that weekend with the two wins. I think it's the first year that we've won with the Giants on top of having a successful Friendship Four. So I slept better on the Sunday night. I took a bit of a break on Monday and was back at the league meeting on Tuesday. But I feel refreshed because it's an enjoyable time of the year. There's not a lot of stress during the games. I normally am stressing watching the Giants, where it didn't matter who was winning. I just wanted to run smoothly and for everybody to have a good experience, fans, participants, and everybody attached.
The four teams that come over, again, a third year of the event, it was an absolute tremendous success, and great to see Clarkson skating out the winners on Saturday evening.
It was. I mean, they were a solid team. There were some big boys there. They skated well. They played together as a unit. You could see in practice that they were good. And Providence were as well. I saw Providence beat BU a couple of years ago in that Final Four game that we flew over to Boston for. And they've got some players still on this team that were on that team. And they're turning themselves into a powerhouse. And, you know, losing to a team like Clarkson, who's now number three in the rankings, and keeping it tight, they actually moved up in the standings. They're both top 10 teams. So, like, the folks of Northern Ireland that made it down to the games were spoiled, because it was unreal hockey.
Clarkson went a little bit beyond what the other teams did and decided to bring their band in, and the atmosphere they created was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I think the highlight for me of the tournament might have been on the Friday in W5, in the STEM portion of the event, when we had, I think, 500 school kids in there with Kanos. The band was in there as well. I think they rode on the Winterland Express train, and they were on climate, and eventually marched the kids over to the arena in a single file line playing. And it was so loud in the pavilion. It was a great experience, and I'm sure one that the kids, the band, and everybody that saw it will never forget.
Moving into year four, you know, we all know you've got an interest in one of the teams coming over, but can you confirm the other three that they're making their way over for 2018?
Well, of course, we've got BU, and we've got UConn from Hockey East, and we've got Union and Yale from the ECAC, a couple former past NCAA champions and some pretty high-profile colleges.
And the favourite team there for yourself and Shane Johnson would definitely be BU. Would they be getting any preferential treatment when they're here?
100%. I think we're going to be watched. That Steve Hagwell from the ECAC was on us, making sure that we're not doing things in advance of the tournament, giving any preferential treatment. But it'll be hard not to. Four of the best years of my life were at Boston University, and you know, I might be secretly cheering for them, but you know, I think the experience for all the players coming over will be the same. Hospitable Belfast, the people, is what they remember.
Belfast Giants, we started our 10-game road trip on the weekend. You've already touched on, you know, two great victories, Coventry and Cardiff. Again, I was speaking to Adam Keefe earlier, and Adam was very pleased with the weekend, but you must be equally pleased with the unit that went over.
Anytime you can get 4 points in this league this year, it's a great weekend. And you know, I think that the team is growing in character, playing through all the adversity that we've had through injuries and suspensions. And I think Adam's done a great job pulling the best out of all the players that we had. We found a way to win those games that you felt like were over. We clawed back. Coventry's not an easy place to pick up points, and they proved that in the first game that we played there. Watching the highlights of that game, it was coming from behind again in their building. It's never easy. And the Cardiff game, Cardiff is the defending champions, and they've improved on that team. So for us to go and pick up 4 to 4 points in Cardiff, it's an incredible start to the season in that rivalry. And I think that, again, reiterating the fact that Adam's done a solid job with a depleted lineup, pulling a lot out of the guys that we had. And I thought most of the individuals we had in the lineup played a good game.
I think that answers the next question I was going to ask, was with regards to about a third of the way through the season so far. Are you happy the way things are progressing?
Yeah, I am. It's frustrating, like, you know, trying to put lineups together and moving people into different positions. But all teams have gone through this or will go through this. We prep diligently on what it takes to win. Like, that's our goal. Like, we started at the beginning of the season putting a roster together and mapping out a blueprint to win silverware. And we have an idea in our head what it's going to take to get in terms of the number of points. And when we got a quarter of the way through the season, we weren't there. You know, we didn't get to the number that we wanted to get to. but I would have absolutely taken the number that we were at with the injuries. If you'd have told me beforehand that we would have been playing, you know, with two forwards on D, pulling a player out of retirement, and seven or eight guys injured, important players injured, to still put winning streaks together and sneak out games. Some games, you know, that might have, we might not have played the prettiest, but we grinded them out and picked up points. I would absolutely take it. You know, I'd take that number because I think our schedule is weighted in our favor post-Christmas. So if we could figure out a way to turn the SSC into a fortress, you know, guys get comfortable here, get a little bit more time on ice because you're not traveling on the Mondays, we're going to be in good shape.
November is over. Christmas is fast approaching. It is a time, of course, for the November Player of the Month Award, sponsored by Phonacab. We opened nominations on Monday and asked you to name the player that you believe should be awarded the next Player of the Month Award. You came back to us in great numbers with all sorts of names, and we drew up the following shortlist. So, the four players up for November's A View from the Bridge Player of the Month Award are: number 1, Jackson Whistle. Number 15, Darcy Murphy. Number 63, Brendan Connolly. And number 88, Ryan Martinelli. Polling has begun. We're already up to almost 500 votes, and it will continue until Friday at 5 p.m. Get yourself over to our Twitter account at AVFTB or on twitter.com/AVFTB. We also have links on Facebook for you to go and vote for who you believe should be November's Player of the Month. So get voting. Right, gents, let's make this quick. We do have our four nominations: Whis, Conley, Darcy Murphy, and it seems to be every month, Ryan Martinelli. Sizz, who's your call?
This month I'm going to go with Brendan Connolly. You know, he scored some really important goals for us. You know, game winner there on Saturday, fresh in the memory, and again, town goal on Sunday. I just think he's been excellent. He's a real quality player. And, you know, it makes players better around him. So, for me, Brendan Connolly this month.
David?
I could probably make an argument for any of them. Big Ryan Martinelli fan. I think he's been sensational in the back
every
end all season.
Every month he's got a nomination.
Has he been nominated? So maybe if he doesn't win it, he'll be MVP then, come the end of the season, because he's blocked shots for fun. He puts those big size 22 skates in the shooting lanes, and he hits like a train as well. But, you know, Simon said there, Brendan Connolly has done so much, scored so many crucial goals, made so many special plays, makes his line mates better, whatever line he's on. Darcy Murphy's also been brilliant. But I think, and we talked about him slightly earlier, the load he's had to carry, the goals that he, or the saves that he's made, and the amount of wins he's taken over the last month, for me, I'm going to vote Jackson Whistle.
Darcy Murphy's my call. I think he's been absolutely phenomenal, considering the slow start he's had to the season, or he had the season, and we did call him out. We did call out the fact that we didn't think he was reaching his potential. He's really reaching his potential now. I think the speed that he has, the ability he has, and he's been brilliant these last couple of weeks. Wherever you are, if you want to get in touch and want to vote in this month's Player of the Month sponsored by Phonacab, get yourself to Twitter, at AVFTB on Twitter, or twitter.com/AVFTB. There's also a link on our Facebook page. And the poll will close at Friday at 5 p.m.
Dops. 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 Dops.
Yes, we start the Around the League section with Dops. Now, we referred to this briefly in the section in regards to the games we've played, but there were quite a few determinations by Dops this past week. I'll run you through them very quickly, and we're going to talk about them in a second. Gleeson Fournier, the Cardiff Devils, got a game. Jonathan Ferland, our own at Belfast Giants, got three games. Andre Deveau of the Sheffield Steelers was given a 6-game suspension, 1 for kicking, 2 for slew-footing, 3 for throwing a stick. But he's been released by the Steelers. The determination now is that they will have to play an import short despite releasing him from his contract. Danick Paquette of the Coventry Blaze, had to think about that, he's received a 5-game suspension, whilst Thomas Nicola of the Guildford Flames has received a 3-game, which will include the game against the Belfast Giants on Sunday. Finally, and most notably probably for us, is Jason Ellery, the kitman for the Belfast Giants, has received a 2-game suspension for comments that were made on the bench. Now, the DOPS determinations have been littered with interesting yet informative and sometimes amusing descriptions, but it's not without its critics. So time comes after a month to discuss properly the new system in the light of this week's assessments, and we are delighted to be joined by a good friend of ours, and a voice you heard only a few weeks ago before all the changes took place, but someone we love having on the show. It's Dr. Victoria Silverwood. How are you, Vic?
I'm great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Let's just cut to the chase with regards to since you were last on the show, obviously, was after the Fretter incident and all the fallout that took place after that. There was reform, and we now have the DOP system as it is. What are your thoughts?
Really positive move. If it is as it has been described to us, then it's positive to see that the league are willing to invest in it. They're willing to spend money to get it done properly. Hopefully they took on board, well, they certainly seem to take on board a lot of the things we discussed last time, and the massive outcry that there was from the Fretter incident. They've also talked about addressing the four-man referee system. So kind of putting money where their mouth is, and hopefully that will cover them legally a bit more than it had before.
And what are your thoughts on the way that we've received it? Like I say, it's not, the determinations have not been without their critics with regards to the wording.
Yeah, I was actually away last week, but a player from a nameless team, not anywhere near me actually, contacted me to ask me what I thought of it, and it read, this was the Rosehill incident, and yes. To me it just read like it was, I don't know, Simsy or somebody writing it rather than the way it was written before. But this week we seem back to the previous sort of super DOPS explanations.
We always refer to that discussion long ago, the big debates and Vote Davy. Do you think it's been for the positive, or do you think that maybe, you know, are you one of the critics with regards to the way that the determinations are worded?
Well, you know, we were very critical of the old system, and when the new guys were announced a few weeks ago, you know, they've had a few decisions since then, and the Giants have been on the end of quite a few of those due to our disciplinary issues this year, and suspensions. And to be honest with you, I think it's 100% better now than what it was. I think the people that are making the decisions now, led by an ex-NHL linesman, you know, they know what they're talking about, and that's the most important thing. And as long as it stays consistent, I think, you know, I don't think anybody can complain the way things are going. However, looking at some of the decisions that have been made this week, and especially the one for Fournier, because that hit by Gleeson Fournier on John Kurtz after 6 seconds of the game, for me, was worse than what the one Jim Van Der Meer received 2-game ban less than 3 weeks ago in Dundee. So it's not consistent at the minute. So that's just my personal view. I thought that the Gleeson Fournier one, he explodes through his legs up into his shoulder and then up into his elbow, and it elbows John Kurtz in the head, whereas Jim was more of a hockey play. Unfortunately, the kid you know, took a headshot and ended up hitting his head off the ice and obviously with concussion as well. So it's never nice. Again, Vic knows more about concussion side of things than any of us put together, or all of us put together. But, you know, again, if a player has a concussion, I think that, you know, it's vitally important that we get the right support for him and right help to get him back to fitness as quickly as possible.
I think that's the interesting point. And I think I saw on Twitter yourself, Vic, you were talking about the actual Fournier hit was deemed to be assessed under causing injury. It was that was a category that was put forward when we found out about the new Dobson, the fact that they were going to look at, you know, all 5 minute majors and blah blah blah. But one of the categories that we spoke about on the podcast at the time was the category of causing injury. Now we also have, when we look at the determination, Fournier's play is deemed under what they call careless, category two being reckless. I assume category three is deliberate. But when I looked at that play, I agree with you, Simon, it looked a lot worse than what took place with Jim Vandermeer. Vic, when you look at the, have you seen the play? Have you seen the hit from Fournier?
I have. During the game, I kind of missed it in the footage on the webcast, but I've seen it since, and I'm going to have to say something that's going to make me really unpopular with Devils fans. but you know, them's the breaks. unfortunately, I think that it's a 3-game hit. I think it was a deliberate sort of upward movement. It was at speed with force, elbow to the head. To me, that's a 3-game ban, not a 1-game ban. Reading the what they said in terms of their deliberation, it seems like they've actually kind of removed some games or gone more leniently because they believe that he shouldn't have come back out for a fight. Mm-hmm. Now, I kind of agree with them on that, I think. I can understand why he did come out for a fight, because it wasn't dealt with by the referee in the game, despite it being in full view. But at the same time, you can't allow a concussed player to come back out onto the ice, whether they have a fight or not. There has to be something put in place to protect them.
Davey?
Like, me and Vic talked about this afternoon briefly, and I completely agree with her. And it brings up, you know, something that I've spoke to several people about today on the protocol for concussions, and that there should be an independent process in place that take it every car at the game. It should be an independent process, much like the NHL. I sent you that link through earlier on, you know, what the NHL players have to go through to go back on the ice when there's a suspected concussion. It's pretty black and white. They're scored out of 6 on, I think it's 22 different things. Vic would know a bit more about that, but, and it gives them a score, and it's, you're fit to play, you're not fit to play. Curtsy and that player back out in the ice, and that's ultimately got Fournier. You know, Cardiff have gone to Edinburgh tonight. Fournier has sat his game out. He's fit to play. In comparison to the Jim Vandermeer hit on the, what do you call the wee lad he caught the other week?
Adam Harding.
You know, in that situation, Vandy's standing pretty still. Harding drops a shoulder on him. Vandy's 2-game back. Fournier has came at speed from a different postcode. He's blindsided him and he jumped in to hit and caught him square in the head. Principal point of contact, even by Dobbs standards there, is to say the principal point of contact is to the head at speed. So the minimum of a causing concussion injury that they set down the other week was 2 games. I think Fournier has got away very, very light here, and down to us allowing Curtsy back on the ice. If Curtsy doesn't come back into that game, Fournier is looking down a barrel of at least 3 games, I think. But that brings into the wider discussion the protocol for injured players being allowed back on the ice.
Says, does this come in as a mistake by the Giants with regards to letting them back on the ice, or a mistake by the Giants by looking for it to be categorised under a injury to player?
Paddy, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I've been concussed before playing hockey, but I was too stupid, and this is 18 years ago, I think it was, the first concussion that I had, and I played on. I didn't finish the period, but I came back out for the second period, and I ended up playing the next day. And then it was after that I didn't feel right. But, you know, I'm led to believe that John Kurtz spoke with Adam Keefe. He went into, you know, he obviously came back out. Davey contacted us and said that he really struggled to get off the ice and struggled to get into the room as soon as the incident happened. He returned back for the first period. I'm led to believe, from what I'm being told by Adam Keith and a few other guys, is that Farina went after him, looking for the scrap. And John Kurtz isn't the type of guy to, you know, not to answer the bell whenever he has to. However, I don't think he should have been out for that. If it was, obviously it is concussion, I don't think he should have come back out of the dressing room for the start of that period. But he was in there on his own. He came out on his own merit. And then at the end of the period, Kiefer had said to him, he said, look, are you feeling all right? And he said, I don't feel too bad. And then it was then, you know, within 10 or 15 minutes after that he really didn't start to feel right. And he was sick in the dressing room a number of times. between the second and third period. So I'm not qualified to be answering exactly the symptoms, exactly what it would be. I'm sure Vic would know. Is it a delayed, can it be a delayed reaction to concussion, Vic, or is it something that happens instantly? I honestly don't know.
Yeah, no, it can be delayed up to 24 hours. So if you've had a concussion, then you shouldn't be sleeping for more than an hour at a time. Someone should be waking you up every hour, because it can be delayed by, you know, until sort of early the next day. So that's sort of one of the problems that maybe he didn't realise at the time. But kind of similarly to what I said about the Galiakos incident with Freta, and I kind of said, well, he's going to kick out, he's concussed and he's lying prone on the floor. It's the same if he is concussed, he's not necessarily going to know he is, and he's not going to know necessarily that he's doing the right thing by coming back on the ice, yeah. Which is why we need to have a proper protocol where we have an assessor at the game, a sort of trained medic who has the right to stop players playing. Because no player is ever going to choose to bench themselves, even with a bit of a concussion.
You've just knocked the nail on the head. I wouldn't have done it. I would not have done it. I basically wanted to help my team. John Kurtz is, I wouldn't say, built with the same, you know, as what I have, because he's played at a hard, much higher level.
He can't stand up to you, he says. Can't stand up to you.
But no, you're absolutely right. There's guys there who don't want to admit when they're hurt, and that is a problem. But we're obviously it's coming down to a monetary issue, because we can't even have assessors for the referees. They can basically do what they want. Linesmen can do what they want and say what they want. Whereas, you know, you're talking about bringing a medical professional into an ice rink to be there every single game at this level, especially. There's no, who's expected to pay for it? I believe, my own view is, it should be the home team paying for it, and there should be a medical professional at every single game. Now, I know the Giants have their own doctor on site at every game, but would, you know, if, for argument's sake, if Cardiff Devils come into Belfast next week, played against the Giants, Andrew Hotham took a hit, and Hotham's the type of guy, you know, he'd want to play the next shift, but would he take the advice of a medical professional from a Belfast Giants set of things, thinking, oh, well, you know, the Giants want to get him off the ice as quick as possible and keep him off the ice?
That's always going to be the issue, and you do have to have a doctor every game, but usually they're there for the home team, unless there's something major, okay, so they'll step in. But that doctor, you know, while they're working for the home team, can't really choose to say to them, well, you're not going to go back on, because there is, it's so open to people taking advantage of it and getting the best players off on concussion protocol. But you have to have something in place that's better. And that's one of the issues with the league. And, you know, I was in Philadelphia and in New York last week doing some interviews for the Ice Guardians book. And a couple of the players were mentioning to me about, you know, the Elite League, and you're saying, oh, it's a shit show, isn't it? You know, all we hear over here is what a mess it is, and how the refereeing's messed up and how DOPS is messed up. And it's just got a terrible reputation. And I think that's important to it making money as well. So sometimes you have to spend money on safety to be able to recoup it in the product on the ice.
Davey, you know, you're the one who always talks on the podcast regards to player safety. You're wearing the face guard, having everything protected. We come to, like I say, we're discussing the fact that maybe there should be independent medical assistance at games. It is a fast and physical game. Even if you look at football, was it Jose Mourinho who was one of the ones who was spearheaded the having to be an ambulance and a paramedic at every game for players? I can't see why football, okay, we're talking about the Premier League, you're talking a lot more money, but for a fast physical sport like ice hockey, surely this is a must.
Paddy, it's hard to believe we're actually talking about this as something that isn't there already. Here, Vic agreeing. You know, I link up that article later on about the NHL and what they have to go through, and that SCAT2 process that Vic's probably well familiar with. You know, a doctor's got to be independent, irrespective of who's paying them. You know, just because he's being paid by the Cardiff Devils to be a doctor at the game, he's still a doctor, and he'll be independent enough to assess under a very strict guidelines. And it's just like, you can't get around those, because that doctor's license to practice would be in jeopardy if he's, you know, I'll mark him down a wee bit there, and it turns out, you know, to use Hotham as Simon's example, goes back out there and is clearly concussed and takes an injury and is out of work for 2 months or whatever, or never plays. What do you call a guy from Nottingham? Never play the game again? Or no, it was Cardiff.
Cardiff, Guildford.
Tyson Marsh.
John Kurtz had suffered a brain injury the other night, and as I discussed with Vic earlier, he couldn't barely get off the ice. He didn't know where he was for a few seconds. He's skating around circles. He's crawled up the tunnel. The footage is there. I'm not making this up. You know, the footage is on Ice Time TV. You see him on his hands and knees, crawling up the tunnel, and Taft goes over to him. That guy should not have been allowed back on the ice. Now, you've got this ice hockey warrior code, you know, where he's gone, no, coach, I'm okay. He'd suffered a bang to the head. He wasn't thinking straight, clearly. He's gone out and he's left a little touch on Farina, and Farina's came after him and said, do you want to go? And he's, yeah, let's get it on. He shouldn't have been in that position to be able to even get indulgent in a fight. He clearly wasn't thinking straight. He's been, as you've said, Simon, you know, he's vomiting in the locker room between periods. It's time to shut him down. You know, this is, and as Vic said, he should have been assessed that whole night by an independent medical team or by a doctor. But, you know, just the way things are, the Giants are on the road. He's probably just gone to the hotel. You know, ice hockey player, sleep it off. See what you're like in the morning.
Let's bring it back to Dops then. And I'm reading the determination again. And it said that the body check was reported as a reason for an apparent injury. It's not conclusive if the check to the head was, in part or entirely, the determining cause of the apparent injury. The opposing player did return to the play, did engage in a fight later in the game. The fight may be a probable cause for the apparent injury. Now, you've already said that, Vic, that you believe that maybe that is the reason that it maybe could have been a 3-game hit and now it's reduced to 1. Is that the trouble that I mean? I guess it's ironic. It's a Belfast Giants player and a Cardiff Devils player, but I think it's ironic that a Giants player is involved in this. When a couple of weeks ago we said the determination of an injury at the end shouldn't lead to this situation where you're thinking, well, where was he injured, or is he actually injured?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what they could do given the fact that he came back onto the ice and had a fight. There's always the assumption, even though we now know it's largely wrong, that fighting is worse for your head than a hit. And we know that 95% of concussions are caused by hits, whether they're legal or not. But there's always going to be that assumption. And I imagine they were just trying to protect themselves. He's not a known, Fournier is not a known sort of repeat offender. And I guess they're giving him the benefit of the doubt and acknowledging that he came back. And, you know, in terms of him coming back on the ice, you have to lay that responsibility with the Belfast Giants, you know, who are the management team, because it's important that they make those decisions when the players don't. And that is one of the problems that we've seen. And again, we see it with Taffy receiving his suspension as well, that that's something that has been missing from your team this season.
Says, when you think we'll go around and we'll wrap this section up, but I've just one final question around just for everybody. I'll start with you. The new Super Dops, as we refer to it, it obviously is an improvement on what we have, but there maybe is room for further improvement.
Listen, there's always room for further improvement when player safety is at the paramount topic with regards to our sport. And for me, again, with regards to where we are right now, there's still one concussion a season is too many. We've had 3 already, and it's only November. So, actually, technically 4 already, and it's only November. So, there's 3 which we already know about, and there's 1 which has been quieter, and it hasn't been made public. But there's 4 concussions within the Belfast Giants players this season alone, and that's from hits to the head. And that is absolutely unacceptable. That needs to be taken out of the game. With regards to the officials on that game on Saturday, Davies already voiced his opinion on social media, and he's absolutely 100% right. How the 3 of those officials missed that hit, whether it was 6 seconds in or 6 seconds to go in the game or a period, is absolutely irrelevant. That hit to the head by Gleeson Fournier was totally unacceptable, and he should have basically had his penalty there and then. There's no other way of looking at that. That hit to his head was absolutely intentional by Gleeson Forney. He knew exactly what he was doing. No other way of looking at it. And those officials didn't catch it. For me, that's not good enough.
David?
Oh, 100%. But agree with what Simon's saying there. I sent you the screenshot, the screen grab from when Fournier makes point of contact. Both linesmen and Hicks, unobstructive line of sight, all well positioned. They've clearly seen, even if they give themselves 1, 2, 3 seconds after the hit, they can see how staggered Kurtz is. They've got to go, hang on here, something's happened. Even at that stage, the game should have been blown down to get Kurtz's attention, because he was going around circles, he was trying to go off through the half boards, he didn't know where he was. The referee should have been called that straight away. He's clearly got a head injury. Whether the problem with Hixie there is, if he hasn't seen it, he can't guess. He can't say that's definitely a hit the head if he hasn't perfectly seen it. Because it's one of those, Kurtz has had the shot, so has he turned his head slightly and followed the puck and not quite caught the hit?
Sorry, I have to jump in here. I would argue that point. I would say a hell of a lot of calls that Mike Hicks makes are guesses.
I texted from the game on Sunday night. I thought he didn't have his best game in stripes, to be fair. I thought there was things that went on, penalties that were called, that if you're going to call them, you have to call them against both teams. Now, I'm not accusing of being a homer or anything, but what I'm saying is that, you know, there was slashes on Gulakos when there were slashes going both ways, and Gulakos has got himself a reputation now where he's going to the bin for those when the player who's maybe slashed him is going, you know, staying on for the power play.
Sorry to cut in, lads, because it is stuff that we've already covered with regards to the game. But what about, you know, in the development of Dops, you know, in regards to, obviously there has to be this synergy between Dops and the referees, but the improvement to Dops, is that where it has to happen?
Well, Dops are certainly covering, or certainly backing their officials now, which they haven't done in the past. Even to the point of the Ellery, you know, situation, scandalous. But at the end of the day, Paddy, Dops is in a better place now than it was 6 or 8 weeks ago. We said that because they were so detailed in their clarifications of what happened, it didn't leave an awful lot of room. This is the first one for me that's sketchy, the Kurtz one, because I think the hit from Fournier is so bad, I can't understand why it's only got one game. Irrespective of Kurtz coming back in the game, I think that's a side issue that we've already talked about.
Victoria, how would you look at Dops now? Obviously, we've had the improvements. What has to happen next?
Very pleased to see the improvements. It's definitely a start. What we have to do is encourage the team owners to keep pressuring the board meetings to continue improvements. It's not good enough just to say that we've got a better DOP system. It's not perfect. It never will be perfect, but there are ways of improving it. And more importantly, now we need to have a better, more proactive system in place for concussion. And we have to have a better training, assessing and feedback system for referees. Because neither of those are fit for purpose the way they are, despite Dops' improvements.
Well, thanks for joining us. I want to you mentioned the Ice Guardians book. Is that something we're going to see soon?
I'm not sure how soon. I've got two books on the go at the moment, as well as running a master's. So I'm pretty busy, but it is coming. And it was really good to. The film itself opened up a lot of interviews for me, players I would only ever kind of dreamt of speaking to before, who were really happy to be involved. But it's also made me realise what a mess so many players very recently retired are from concussion, and how it's just a massive ticking time bomb. Mm-hmm. So that's been devastating for me, as somebody who spent 10 years kind of researching hockey on one level and knowing, you know, many of the players through that work. And that's something that's kind of disappointing. But the book will be coming. I am working on it very hard. I've taken some holiday from work over Christmas to write it, because for some reason I think working over my holiday is a good idea. I'm getting loads done. I just want it to be perfect, so it's going to take a bit longer.
Well, I don't think there can be many British hockey fans that haven't seen the Ice Guardians movie, but I believe it's still on Netflix. It's still on Netflix. If you want to go on and have a look at it, there it is. Well worth a watch. Vic, thank you very much for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Vic. One thing I want to just touch briefly on before we move away from Dops, gents, is that 2-game suspension to Jason Taff Ellery. The Department of Player Safety asked him to investigate. He received a bench minor at 16:43 of the third period. As a result of the penalty, was called subsequent report to Dops, and the incident was reviewed. It was not specifically requested by the Cardiff Devils. Based on the game officials' reports and the penalty assessment, Ellery from the players' bench made comments that have been determined to be abusive and detrimental to the conduct of the game. This decision has been made based on IIHF Rule 168 on sportsmanlike conduct, blah, 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 blah. And the fact that the equipment manager's role does not include verbal content directed at opposing players. Taking this into consideration, they've suspended him for 2 games, and that's this weekend against Milton Keynes and Guildford. I don't know where to start with this, Davey. First of all, his name's not on the game sheet, so I don't know how you suspend somebody who's not on the game sheet. Second of all, we don't know what he said or if he said it, who it was called by. This seems to be something that's been determined by the linesman. I watched the video back. The linesman obviously speaks with the referee. The referee speaks with Vandermeer and Shields, then goes to the bench and asks Taff to leave, who looks quite bewildered at the fact that he doesn't know why, as are Kiefer and all the guys on the bench. He leaves, and now we find that he's got a 2-game suspension. What's your take on it?
Paddy, I was at the game, and it was clear that the linesman has skated over the Hicks and the other linesmen that have a little head-to-head here, and Hicks obviously then goes over to Sheds and goes over to the bench. Taff has to leave. He's completely bewildered. After the game, Hicks goes back again. I think it might be Blair Riley this time. I can't 100% remember if it was Riley or Vandy again. And there was a lot of pointing, and clearly very angry and upset rather than angry, very upset. You know, we know Taff well, and this will be hurting him badly, because I do not believe for one second, I have to be very careful what we say, I don't believe for one second that Taff actually said anything. But you've got judge, jury, and executioner here based on he said one person's. There's no concrete evidence here whatsoever from this side. Twice as many games for saying something that no one else heard. Not a player on the bench, not a player on the ice, only one linesman, compared to somebody who almost takes somebody else's head off and gets one game. That's a slight by the by. 100% taking the bank. I am back on Jason Taff Ellery on this. 100%. I'm disgusted and I'm hurt for him, and I hope he's okay.
I have to agree with you. I'm very interested to see what evidence or witness testimony there is to confirm this in a game. The linesman's got his back to the bench. You know, he's been sentenced on the referee's report by the looks of things, the linesman's word. Now, you look at the other suspensions, they're based around solid visual evidence. Says this appears to be what the linesman thinks he heard.
Like, again, it's absolutely ridiculous. This linesman, who's, I think it's the first time I've actually seen his name coming up, ref or linesman, a game against us. So I'm assuming he's new, against a guy who's been involved in our sport at our club for, 13 years, is it, David?
Yeah,
he's been with Belfast. Yeah. But before that, you know, you're talking about in the region of 27 years, I believe, and he's never had a minor penalty. Wind your neck in. Absolutely ridiculous. I would 100% stand by Taff. No matter, that doesn't make a difference what was said. Absolutely irrelevant. Taff's an absolute top lad. 100% top lad. He's been involved in the sport. See, when I was playing hockey, and the first thing you do is trying to get in somebody's head. Chirp them all day long. You know, we all like a good bit of chirping. We do an awful lot of it on here. I just can't fathom what he's supposed to have said. Absolutely no idea. But it's ridiculous that he's being thrown out of a game for the first time in 27 years.
Sis, you know Taff. We all know Taff. Taff is much more likely to have chirped someone in a banter way. You see his
in his own team?
He's chirpy. He's fun.
he is not going to have said something offensive, which is the allegation with the DOP sort of report there. You know, it's just not, it just hasn't happened. I 100% back Paf, 100%. I'm really annoyed about this.
I think we're all in that boat. We'll see how this plays out. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. But it's the DOPS determination. Guys, let's move on quickly because we're really running late. Personnel changes already mentioned. The Steelers have ditched DeVoe. They're waiting a full-time replacement, but announced that Jonas Romberg returns for his third stint in one season at the Steelers with the subsequent injury sustained by Zach Fitzgerald at the weekend, leaving them short on bodies. MK have announced that Ashley Tate's short-term deal with the club will not be continued and he's now without a club. Kyle Tanaka's back in the Elite League, this time with the Clan on a tryout basis. And Andy McKinney moves back to Manchester, having been released by the Flames after 4 years in Surrey. The former Phoenix player back at Altrincham to join the Finnish Storm. He's also on a tryout basis. Up in Edinburgh, well, Mark Tiverton has departed the team due to a family health matter. Says anyone there stand out?
I like Tiverton. I really do. He's played well against us a couple of times this year. And, you know, you touched on Big Fitz. Like, we've given a terrible amount of slack on our show over the last number of months and years. And but it's never nice to see a guy getting hit in the head by a puck. So, hope a big man's all right.
Davey, I should take we're going.
100% agree with Simon about Fitzgerald. And again, people shouldn't be taking pucks in the face in 2017.
No,
shouldn't be happening. That's an assy kid. I'm surprised that he's been released yet, but you know, somebody else will maybe have a wee dip with him. DeVoe, I'm not surprised to see him going. I think Sheffield were maybe trying to get him down the road to mitigate, but maybe Dobbs would, you know, have said the ban goes with him. But you know,
well, it does go with him. It does go with him if he joins another Elite League team. But that's yeah, not but sure. Happen.
Well, nobody's going to sign a player that's banned until he's served his ban anyway. So I think that's fanciful. But you know, he didn't exactly set the world alight either. So one of those. Not really that interested.
Interesting results. Sheffield took a 7-2 hammering in MK, prompting Paul Thompson to complain to the press about keyboard warriors. MK are difficult to beat at home. We'll talk about that later. Edinburgh with the win over Dundee, hot on the heels of the win over Coventry last week. And Fife, the comeback kings, came from 3-0 down to take an overtime win in Nottingham. An overtime win over Nottingham at the NIC. One last point before we move on. Challenge Cup draw. It wasn't a draw. The Challenge Cup selections were made yesterday at 1 p.m. on Facebook Live. Sheffield picked Dundee. MK surprisingly picked Nottingham, which I think surprised a lot of people. Belfast picked Fife, which left Guildford against Cardiff. Davey, Belfast against Fife and the other selections, what do you think?
I think for us, Fife makes probably the most sense of what we had left to pick from. I think if we had first pick, we might have picked them anyway, Simon. I don't know what you think about that, but you know, I think we've got a good chance. KIA is always a difficult place to go, but you know, I think over six periods of hockey, we should have enough to see ourselves through to the next round. I wasn't that surprised that MK picked Nottingham. Least bit of travel, you know, for what was available. Probably they feel that they can beat them, so.
Well, certainly at home they could probably give them a good run.
Yeah. Well, it was a novel way of it was interesting to see the chairman of the league at that stage was there as a Sheffield Steeler rather than while the Sheffield Steeler representative streamed the thing on Periscope rather than allowed everybody to watch the league stream. So neither of the Steelers to do what they want.
Yeah, seemingly so. Simon, choice of Fife.
Yeah, I think Fife's probably the one we would have wanted the whole way through. You know, I think it makes sense. Absolutely makes sense for Milton Keynes. It's going to be a midweek game. They've only got an hour to travel up the road. Nottingham will bring a big fan base down to them. But make a few quid out of it. It's probably the best, you know, of they probably could have hoped for. And again, you know, Milton Keynes is a difficult place to go into. They've only lost twice this year. Ironically, once to Nottingham and once to Brayhead. So, Brayhead, you know, didn't make it through because they're crap. So it's but with regards to the you know the stream for watching the EIHL draw or selection process, I can't even get that right. You know, it's on at 1 o'clock. It wasn't only about 4 or 5 minutes past, and then it stopped after Sheffield selected their team. And And in fairness, the only one that was still going was the Sheffield Steelers Periscope from Simsy. So, you know, it's simple things. Just get the bloody thing. Instead of putting it out on a phone, get it done properly.
Well, I think the Sheffield stream, the Sheffield Periscope highlighted how the Elite League were doing theirs, which was just basically somebody holding an iPhone while Gary Moran presented the show. Top quality production value, right?
I suppose it is better than a Marks and Spencer's bag.
That is it. Hashtag progress, I think is what Craig Anderson said. Lads, before we look at the preview of the weekend, just I want to have a quick... We did cover it. We just want another quick chat because we didn't get to talk about it after the game. But the view from the bridge, Colin Shields' testimonial last Tuesday, Davey, was a brilliant event.
Oh, it was a lot of fun to be at and be involved in. It was the dinner the night before was a good laugh too. He says, Paddy, unfortunately, you couldn't come over for that, but it was a really good laugh. The draft. Oh, well, he probably remembers the start evening anyway.
I was all right. on Wednesday.
Wednesday night. It was a really good night. The draft was a lot of fun. Dylan Cackey getting selected was amazing. But the game itself, you know, it wasn't a great spectacle of hockey, but it was more really nice crowd in for Sheds, some really great speeches, and to see a lot of those Belfast Giants legends back on the ice. Graham Walton, you know, must be what, Simon now pushing 350 pounds, you know, he's
he was
great to see all those guys back. You know, he nearly needed a defibrillator just walking from the locker room. But you know,
you actually watched me interviewing him and Mark Morrison together, and two questions each for both Wally and the Mo Train lasted nearly 20 minutes.
And you know, getting wee things like Mark Morrison bought me a beer he's owed me for like 12 years, which that was a lot of fun, and met some of his old teammates that he played with in Glasgow, and you know, they talked really, really highly, and as expected, they talked really, really highly of Simon Kitchen, and what a great guy he was to play with back in the day as well. So it was nice to hear so many stories, and you know, the likes of Johnny Bradshaw and Ali Watson there that were on our table, but told them it was a black tie dinner, and they turned up in the full penguin suits, and you know, but they took the banter well, and you know, they got to meet Jeff Swayze, and they got to stand and talk to the Hoff for half an hour, and you know, these hockey guys just love talking hockey. Mike Hoffman went and stood with those two guys for half an hour, talked about his time in America. They just stood, they had a beer, and you know, they. I love to talk to Sandy and Stewie and all those boys, just having a yarn. It's just fantastic that they're able to do that. And that's the first time in a testimonial there's been a dinner. And I thought it was a really, really great event. And then I don't think the auction, we'll have to mention the auction, sure. Then some crazy prices by Simon and Killer were brought in. I'm not sure if all the bids were legit bids, I have to be honest, but some of the money, like Loiter shirt going for £1,000. So, you know, brilliant that the testimonial went so well. Colin Shields obviously going to donate some money from what he made to, oh, who was it? It was the Transplant, Northern Ireland Transplant Society or something.
Wasn't
like it? You know, so fantastic that the club are able to honour a guy who has put so much in. As I said there, we were doing the stats last week. He's played pretty much 50% of all Belfast Giants games. Goals, points leader, all the different things he leads in. And now he's some of the money that has well-earned money, because the testimonial is about trying to get a player just a little bit of cash back. That's the whole point of it. But he has taken the decision that it's not all going to be for him. He's going to make sure some of that money goes to Northern Ireland charities, and I think that's fantastic.
Listen, not even Jim McGaw could justify some of those crazy prices. It was absolutely it's a joke for the teenagers.
The young people listening to our podcast will not get that at all.
Says you were front and center through that whole event on the microphone and at the auction. But it, overall, just good fun.
It was great crack. I'm just glad to get to play a bit and help him out, and you know, like this guy. I said on the night when we were doing the auction and trying to sell his shirt, I don't think his records are going to be beaten. I really don't. I think don't think anybody will ever beat the points. No. I don't think anybody will ever beat his goals.
I agree with that.
I certainly don't think anybody will beat his assists. You know, he's going to be, I think Colin Shields will go down as the best Belfast Giant player ever. Ever. And that's a big statement, because we've had some fabulous players. But longevity, nine seasons, eight seasons and two half seasons. So
Todd Callum was telling us about that on the podcast last week.
He was. I honestly do not think his record. But put it this way: if anybody ever beats his records, then they're going to have to be here for at least 10 or 12 years because the league's getting tougher to score points in. He's been here for all that time, and he's scored some big goals at big times. He's it's not just on the ice either. He's just a top lad off the ice. You know, he's bought into it. He's married a local girl. He's set up a business here. He couldn't speak highly enough of him.
Yeah, fantastic night. And I think, one of my highlights, just to round this off, came at the very end. We were chatting to some of our lads and Todd Kelman came by and said, well, what did you think tonight? And I said, Todd, at one point there, you were stood out in the ice in your red gloves and your red Cardiff Devils helmet. And, I saw the forward come, I think it was Darcy Murphy, come at you, and he absolutely smoked past you at speed. You looked completely bewildered, and it brought back so many memories. Yeah, he didn't look happy at that, right? This weekend, the Belfast Giants are back in action. Games 3 and 4 of this 10-game road swing that we are really focusing on it, but when it comes to the 29th of December and the Giants come back, these 10 games could be fundamental to our season. So game 3 is MK Dons, MK Lightning, in an Elite League game against the Giants at Planet Ice MK, or MK Arena, I think it is, down there by the train station, Saturday at 7 p.m. and then on Sunday over to the Spectrum to take on the Flames, 6 p.m. Regards to the game against MK, well, who else are we going to talk to? Simon called up Matt Nickerson.
Matt, it's great to have you on the show again, mate. We welcome you. Well, we're looking forward to welcoming you back to Belfast with Milton Keynes later in the season. But it's one of those ones where you've made the trip over to Milton Keynes now. And how are you getting on after leaving Belfast?
Yeah, shared his testimony. It was fun. It was great to see. Obviously, you see a lot of old faces, Daryl, Kiefer, all the boys. It was great. I had so much fun. We had so many laughs, and then came back here, and we had a big win over Sheffield at home in Milton Keynes. So that was been, just looking forward to a Saturday against the Giants.
Yeah, and that game leading into, as I say, the big win against Sheffield last weekend was followed up with a loss in Guildford, wasn't it?
Yeah. I obviously left that out, Simon, but some penalty trouble, and you know how it goes.
Well, listen, you've had success against the Giants already, the earlier in the season, and it was one of those games where probably the most disappointing Giants performance of the season to that point. But you've a great home record with Milton Keynes this year. You've only lost 2 games so far.
It's been a tough place for opponents to come in and pick up points. We've done well, and we've come out in good form most nights. Obviously, we had a slip up against Brayhead a couple weekends ago. Poor performance on our part, but hopefully we can keep it rolling and keep this home form up.
My good mate Peter Russell, played with Peter a couple of years in Belfast and then Dumfries. And how's he getting on coaching at this level now in the Elite League?
Oh, Pete's, he's got it dialed in, and he gets us well prepared each weekend for our opponents. And he's doing a great job. And I think a lot of people have been surprised at, where we've been in the standings and some results we've got. But, Pete wants more from us, and he's pushing us to keep striving to be higher in the table. And, so that's good. We're not satisfied where we're at. We're trying to climb and get better every day.
Next up for Milton Keynes is the Belfast Giants on Saturday. The Giants travel over to Milton Keynes this weekend. I know you've got a lot of fans back in Belfast, and there's quite a few heading over to see you this weekend with probably mixed emotions again. Big Knicker fans, but obviously they'll want the Giants to win.
We'll see about that. No. Hopefully after the game, when I give him a hug, I can give him a big smile and steal those 2 points again. But it'll be a tough game. Giants are on form. Obviously I keep up with how they're doing week in, week out. And it's not going to be easy, especially getting healthy and getting Rudy back. So it'll be a good test, and it'll be good to see him.
How are you settling into Milton Keynes along with Nura? And obviously, you know, I mean, it's no Belfast. Like, I'm always going to say that.
Yeah, no, Belfast was unreal. It's great. Nora's settled in. We got the pop over, little ladies here, and everything's normal. So hopefully we can beat you this weekend again, Simon, so I can send you a message after the game.
Yeah, I'll look forward to that. Because if it doesn't come, believe you me, it'll be going back the other way. We're going to watch we've managed to get an agreement with Milton Keynes TV, Milton Keynes Lightning TV, and we're going to show it live at the Odyssey Cinema on Saturday evening. So there'll be hopefully about 150, 200 Giants fans all watching the game live in the cinema.
That's awesome. I've seen something about that on social media. That's cool. That's really neat. I've watched many of movies in that cinema. It's nice they're showing hockey now.
Well, we can't let you leave without having a chat about your NCAA team, Clarkson, winning the Friendship Four at the weekend. You must have been made up. I'm sure you had a bit of banter last week with Shedzy for Maine and Jeff Mason for Providence. But, you know, the Golden Knights pulled through and took the Vale Pot home.
Yeah, Tech. That's what their nickname is, Tech. They doing unreal. Really good. I mean, John Buttigieg was tweeting about them winning the Vale Pot, the Friendship Four, and they're just moving up in the rankings, so that's great. It's good to see a small school, Clarkson, with such a strong year this year.
Matt, listen, we do miss you in Belfast. I think you know you that. Obviously, the love you got last week when you stepped on the ice at the SSA Arena for the first time this year. But I'd be lying if I wish you the best of luck this weekend. I really appreciate your time, big man, and hope to see you again soon.
Thanks, Simon. Can't wait to see you again. Cheers.
Thanks to Nicker. Yes, MK's game, Saturday, 7 p.m. There is a stream of it, and I believe it's also on at the cinemas.
It is. Tickets are going very, very well. And to be honest, I think there's only a few left for the cinema at the minute. And I don't know if we can go bigger this time. We're, you know, we were helped out last week with the Odyssey Cinema, letting us go to the next size. And because it's a Saturday night game, and, you know, the cinema's usually busy on a Saturday night, so... you know, if you want to get your ticket, get along and pick them up at the odysseycinemas.co.uk. Now, because as I say, last week was absolutely brilliant. Anybody was there, if you know them or want to chat to them about it, I don't think anybody had a bad night. And you know, I can't thank the Odyssey Cinemas enough. I have to say a big thank you to MK Lightning TV as well. They've been brilliant, and we've done a great deal with them. Helped out by Dave Laurie from Giants TV.
Yep, MK Lightning, Saturday, 7 p.m. If you can't get down to the Odyssey Cinema, look at Giants OSC as well for details on that. Or you can get the stream online from MK Lightning TV. And then again, against the Flames in the Elite League, Sunday at 6 p.m. I don't know if there is a webcast of that. I'm not sure if the Flames do.
No, there's no webcast in Guildford.
Okay. We'll try to keep you up to date with all the goings-on at AVFTB on Twitter. Right, TFAs. This is one long show. TFA's sponsored by our good friends at Belfast Giants TV. Stephen Murray at Stephen Murray 1980. If you could have one forward from Chris Higgins or Daryl Lloyd back for the rest of the season, who would you choose? David, was it Jimsy?
Chris Higgins.
Why?
Because we've already got Darcy Murphy, we've already got Brendan Connolly, and we've already got David Rutherford in that sort of agitated. We'll do what's needed. We'll go into those dirty areas. So I think someone that can unlock. So Sylvester does the Higgy role brilliantly, but Higgy just has that something special. When the puck gets on a stick, you don't know what's going to happen. And for the vast majority of times, neither does the D-man. And just he's the edge of your C player. Be fantastic to have Loiter back. Don't get me wrong. He's the Belfast Giants legend and all that there. But for me, just if that's a straightforward, I have to pick one or the other. Higgy for me.
Simon?
As much as I love Daryl Lloyd, I think he's a fantastic guy, real, real brilliant player for us as well, but he hasn't got Adam Keith to back him up on the ice. So, I think it's an easy answer, to be honest. It's got to be Chris Higgins.
Imagine the amount of, though if Daryl Lloyd came back, imagine the amount of money the club will make out of just selling his shirts.
You know what? Yeah, you think you're 100% right. I mean, that auction will go on last Tuesday night was a bit surreal, but no, it's got to be Chris Higgins.
At Stevie Giants 83, it's an interesting one. Is social media ruining hockey? So much access to players, coaches and fans of other clubs these days. And in my eyes, people are just getting more aggressive every day. It's not enjoyable, says.
I enjoy it.
You like giving grief to the...
Yeah, no, but look, at the end of the day, if players can't handle the social media side of things, get off it. Don't do it. You don't have to be on it. It's not a necessity unless you play for Manchester when Neil Russell was in charge. You know, you had to get a Twitter account and then be vocal and get out there. But, like, if you can't have... Look, we all know a guy who approached us last year about something that was said on social media through ABF TV. He didn't take it very well. And you know, that's his prerogative. Players listen to... players look at Twitter. Players go through Facebook. And if you can't handle the slack which is coming your way after a bad performance or a defeat, guys, get off it. Just get off it. Don't pay any attention to it. Don't read the newspapers. Don't watch the news. That's fine. It's your prerogative. You want to be on it. But you're playing well, you get a pat on the back. You play badly, you get a kick in the backside.
David?
It's one of those, Paddy. Social media can at times be very toxic. People write things that they wouldn't say to people's faces, that's for sure. You know, and there is the keyboard warrior, you know, when you shut the door, things get said that you wouldn't have a bottle to say to someone to their face. And you have to understand that things can be said, can be very hurtful. And I know Simon's right. If you can't take the heat, stay in the kitchen. But it's only natural that people maybe sometimes go and have a wee look and see what people are saying about them. And things can be hurtful, and some people take it better than others. Some people are able just to you know, move past it and not worry about it. Some people can actually really affect. So
Ben O'Connor this week having a pop at a couple of fans due to the fact that Steelers fans put up a poll as to who's the most disappointing player.
Right. You know, Simon is correct. If you can't take that stick, you're just better being off it, because it's now part of life and you have to either learn to manage it or deal with it. And as I think Paul Thompson was right there as well during the week. You know, some of the things that are said are vindictive and they're hurtful, and some people take it better than others. But I think it's just the world we live in now that you've got to accept that it's part of the game.
And fairness, I'm probably glad that it didn't happen on my day. Like
you'd have went and found the people, but sis,
100. That's exactly right. I'd have went and had dug a few heads in. Like, but you're absolutely 100% right. I don't think I'd have been on social media if I was playing now. I honestly don't, I still don't read newspapers. I still don't read newspapers, but I don't think it's...
Does anybody read newspapers? What year are you living in?
I don't know, I'm older than you.
Yeah, that has. Sorry, go.
Doesn't matter, you just cut me up, it doesn't matter. I'm getting off social media, I'm getting home.
Right, that's wrap with the... I'm going to go with one more. Rushy McCavanagh, I'm sorry, your question is absolutely brilliant. I'm going to save it. We have dealt with... Have you seen that one? Did you want to deal with that, David?
No, I can't remember.
I didn't see it.
Oh, no, it's a brilliant one in regards to tariffs and DOPS and comparisons, which we dealt with a little bit during our discussion with Vic Silverwood. And if we get back to it next week, I want to save it and maybe come back to it. What I will finish off with is Keelan Deeney. As the Caps go through yet another player crisis, should the bigger elite league teams who are carrying younger Brits consider offering their services for a short term until imports are found? Players like Eccles, Shudra and Kirk would allow the younger Brits a lot more ice time than they'd get at their parent club, and also provide stability, at least for the short term in Edinburgh. David?
No, it's not up to other clubs to bail. And right, you talk about Shudra there. Shudra scores for Steelers against Dundee tonight. So you must be getting a bit of ice time. The likes of Stevie Eccles, Adam Robinson, stuff that aren't getting ice time at all here. There's an argument there, you know, if the likes of Capitals wanted them on a two-way, you know, would it do them any harm to get a bit more experience, to get a bit more ice time? But I'm not really sure. Capitals have to sort their house out. You know, I don't obviously know exactly what's going on there, but it doesn't look like they're in a very good place at the minute.
No, No, it seems to be some financial issues there or a restructuring going on, Simon.
Yeah, again, it's... Would Edinburgh want our kids to come over there and play for them? You know, Edinburgh...
They still have to pay them. It's not as if they're going to play for free.
That's it. You know, Edinburgh have got some great kids already on their bench and they're not getting nice time or not getting a regular shift, so why would they want to bring in somebody else? I mean, the likes of a young Callie Robertson and his brother Aaron, you know, when he's 17 and 19, I think they are. Tyler Blues is playing a regular shift, local boy. Well, not local, but he's from Kirkcaldy, but, you know, plays in Edinburgh. And to be honest with you, Edinburgh, you know, their SNL team, they've got some really good young kids as well coming through. But it comes down to Edinburgh's own perception with regards to, you know, the players that go in there. I mean, I said at the start of the season, I thought they were going to cause an upset. Couldn't talk a bigger amount of crap if I knew anything about hockey. But these guys, Scotty Neale needs to get his house in order. It's every year that we're talking about the Edinburgh Capitals coming up to Christmas and not being able to keep their house in order. I'd certainly like the league to grow, more teams coming in. It would be great, but they need to sort that out. It's getting boring.
Of course, that sort of insight with Simon Kitch is the only thing you can get here on A View from the Bridge. And, of course, Belfast Giants TV. Right, we'll wrap that up there, lads, in regards to the TFA. Thanks, everybody, for their questions. Keep them coming. Hashtag TFA at A View from the Bridge at AVF TV. Any other business, gentlemen?
Just a wee one with an OL. I touched on the cinema, so I don't really need to mention that. But if you get a chance, guys, all the fans, obviously, if you get a chance to purchase one of the advent calendars from the players that have put it together, all the money they're basically making out of it itself is going to the Northern Ireland Hospice. They're only £5 now. Get yourself along to some of the events that are being held between now and Christmas at the OSC, obviously the one at the cinema. We've got the quiz next Tuesday night, which is absolutely sold out. All the players are going to be there. There's nobody allowed to come in and watch it, which is great. But if you get a chance to support them in any way, shape, or form, do so. Jim Van der Meer, Davey's got a great emoji for him. I thought it was very funny. Jonathan Ferland, Spiro Galakos have all put this together, and they could do your support.
You've made it sound as if Davey's put together some sort of offensive emoji for Jim Van der Meer. You haven't done that, Davey, have you?
No. Well, keep
very funny.
Keep tuned. We're trying to come up with an emoji quiz, so we'll keep an eye on that. But I've got one piece of any other business planning, and it's a girl that I said I'd give a shout out to.
Yeah, Nicole, absolutely,
Nicole Fox, who has got into hockey and it's changed their life. Just the being able to go to the Odyssey or the SSE, she's had some massive changes these last few months. Just reading a tweet here, she's threw anxiety aside and she's went and watched the game with someone she met just a week before, and for once she's happy. So she's written a blog, which I will retweet, and she's just saying that the difference that having the Belfast Giants in her life at the minute has made to her. So I said on the podcast this week, we'd give you a shout out, Nicole. So welcome to the Giants, Nicole, and hopefully catch up with you at rink soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I read through the thing and it was absolutely superb. I think, you know, she was able to just to work through her anxiety and with the Giants, just find another little nuance in her life. And so, yeah, a big shout out to Nicole. Thanks very much for sending that through. Lads, I think we'll wrap it up. It's been a long show. Thanks to Adam Keefe, Brendan Connolly, Steve Thornton, Matt Nickerson, and of course, Dr. Victoria Silverwood. Thanks to everybody for their interaction on Twitter. Don't forget, you've got until Friday at 5 PM to cast your vote on the Player of the Month for November. And you can get all the Friendship 4 interviews and podcasts and the post-game interviews on our soundcloud.com/AVFTB. website. You can also find us on Twitter at AVFTB and on Facebook. Just search for A View from the Bridge. David, Simon, a pleasure as always.
All the best, lads.
Get well soon, David.
Thank you,
indeed.
Simon.
I need a few lamps, mate. I'll help you through. The two games this weekend at MK on Saturday night. If you're not going down to the cinema, you can get that on the webcast, 7 PM. And at the Flames in the Elite League Sunday at 6 PM at A View from the Bridge. We'll keep you up to date on some of the info on that. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. And we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.